Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Chof Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Choftes at the Mishnah. The Gemara, at this point, Maseches Kiddushin, is about to introduce a rather long sugya dealing with mitzvahs that a father is obligated to perform with regard to his son and children with regard to their parents. The Mishnah. Kol mitzvahs haben aloav, anoshim chayovim v'noshim pturos. This line cannot be translated as of yet. The Gemara itself will ask questions of clarification. What does this refer to? But whatever the case is, these mitzvahs, the Mishnah says, men are obligated, women are exempt. V'chol mitzvahs o'av al ha-ben, echad anoshim ve'echad noshim chayovim. This second category, the mitzvahs o'av al ha-ben, both men and women are obligated to fulfill. V'chol mitzvah saseh shazman gromo, positive commands that are time bound. Anoshim chayovin v'noshim turos. Men are obligated, women, females are exempt. V'chol mitzvah saseh shelo azman gromo, all those positive commands that are not time bound, time related, echad anoshim ve'echad anoshim chayovin, whether it be men or women, they are obligated. There are numerous examples of each one of these categories. We will see more about that, of course, in the Gemara. The chol mitzvahs losas are all negative commands, bein shazman gromo bein shelo hazman gromo, whether they be time oriented or not, echad hu anoshim ve'echad hanoshim chayovin. Men and women are obligated. Chutz mi bal takif, with the exception of three negative commands. Bal takif is the prohibition of shaving one's head all around, removing what's called peos harosh, the translated as corners of the head, the hair that grows on a person's temples. That is it's a prohibition to cut that, to remove that. However, only men are bound by this prohibition. Obal tashchis, this is the prohibition of shaving one's facial hairs, one's beard, with a razor. Only men are prohibited in doing that. And obal tatam lemesim, this is an area regarding the kohanim. Female kohanim, people, women that are fathers that are kohanim, are not restricted in defiling to the dead, whereas the menfolk kohanim are prohibited in defiling to the dead. Now the Gemara, as we said, analyzes, clarifies the first category in the Mishnah. My kol mitzvahs haben aloav. What does that mean? And we emphasize women are exempt. E lema kol mitzvahs demachayev brol mevid labo. If you're going to suggest that this means all mitzvahs that a son is obligated to do for his father, so would you say then noshim pturos? Would that be an acceptable thing to say? Now the Mishnah says noshim pturos, but if the first category referred to mitzvahs that a son is obligated to do for his father, we know that women are obligated. V'hatanya, we have the following teaching in the following Tanaic source. We're quoting a posuk that says, the posuk says, ish imo v'oviv tiro, ish ein li'elo ish. Ish would mean a man. Isha minayin, from where do I know women folk also? Kishuomer Ish Imo V'Yoviv Tiro, the Pasuk says a man, his mother and father, they, Tiro is a word in the plural, they are obligated in fulfilling it. Hare Kan Shnayim. You see, the Pasuk is talking to two, men and women, are obligated to be fearing of their mother and father. So what we see, if you're dealing with mitzvahs that a child is obligated to do for his parent, both men and women are bound. So what are we to make of the opening line of the Mishnah? Omar Rav Yehuda, Hochi Komar, Kol mitzvahs haben hamutolos al hoav la'asois livno, all those child-oriented mitzvahs that are upon a father to do for his child, anoshim chayavim v'noshim pturos, the men, fathers, are obligated, the women, mothers, are exempt. Tanina leha d'tan rabbonah, our Mishnah verifies or substantiates or can serve as the basis of the following brisa. Ho'av chayav bivno, a father is obligated regarding his son, lamulo, to circumcise him, livdoso. If he's a firstborn, he has to redeem him. U'lelamdo Torah, we noted above this on Chof Tes Amid Beis, the Gemara there will discuss this obligation. A father is obligated to teach his son Torah, ulasio isha. This is from Daf. This will be discussed on Daf Lamed Omid Beis. The father is obligated to see to it that his son marries a woman, ulalam de umnus, and to teach him a trade. The yesh omrim. This is another opinion, an additional opinion, says af lahashito ben mayim. A father has to teach his child how to swim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Sheino Melamed Es Beno Umanus, any father that does not teach his son a trade, skipping the bracketed line for a moment, Ki'ilu Melamdo Lissus, it's as if he's teaching his son thievery. Now let's read that line again with the bracketed section. Kol Sheino Melamed Es Beno Umanus, Melamdo Lissus, any father who doesn't teach his son a trade is teaching him thievery. So the Gemara reacts, Listus salka daitach. He's teaching him thievery. All that was said is that his father, anyone who doesn't teach his son a trade, so he's teaching him nothing. What do you mean he's teaching him thievery? Ela ki'ilu malamdo listus. By not training him, by not providing your son with a trade, with the education for a trade, then the son will have no income and he will engage in thievery. Not that the father is teaching him thievery, but the father is creating a situation where the son inevitably will become a thief. Now as we go on in the Gemara, you notice a new marking, and we have on the side a nosei mivne, a topic heading with a structural note, and we indicate ad lamed omid beis. So this marking scheme will continue for quite a long while. You can see we're right now on Chof Tes Amud Aleph. The crown shape introduces mitzvos hamutolos al hoav lasos libno, those mitzvos that a father is obligated to do for his son. And we've listed them, lamulo, lifdoso, lalamda terup, lasio isha, lalamda umnus, and lashito benohar. The trapezoid or volcano shape that you see highlights ho'anoshim hashoinim shemutal aleim achrayis lemitzvos elu. We're highlighting the different individuals that are obligated to see to it that these matters are cared for. So if you look at the first set of trapezoid markings in the Gemara itself, you see Minolan, above that we wrote ho'sha'abchai, from where do we know that the father is obligated? In the event that he doesn't come through, so the next trapezoid highlights Beidino, the court is obligated. And following that, Ihu, the child himself at a certain point will be obligated. The next marking, the double underline, highlights the expression "Ihi minola delo mechaiva." We'll translate that. It means she, the mother, the woman. From where do we know that she is not obligated? Because we're engaged right now in all those mitzvahs that a father is obligated to perform for his son. With regard to his son, the Mishnah said the father is obligated, the mother is not. And from where do we know that? And that will be a recurring theme throughout this Gemara regarding each one of these mitzvahs. Now the Gemara. Lomulo, we said a father is obligated to circumcise his son. Minolam, from where do we know that's the father's obligation? Dichtiv, Vayomol, Avram es Yitzchok beno. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac. So that you see it's a father's obligation to see to it that the son is circumcised. And in the event that the father doesn't take care of that, doesn't circumcise the son, it becomes the court's obligation to see to it that that Jewish child is circumcised. The pasuk is addressing the court, or in this sense, the public who is represented by the court, that all males are to be circumcised. And in the event that the court did not see to it that the child is circumcised, then the child, when he becomes an adult, when he reaches 13, he is obligated to have himself circumcised. This pasuk is addressing the individual himself, an individual that has himself circumcised, is subject to kores, the kores punishment. So we see the obligation starts off on the father, goes to the court, and the person himself, the mother, is not in the picture. Ihi minola delo mechaiva, from where do we know that she, the mother, the women, are not obligated to see to it that their children are circumcised? Dechtiv, kasher tziva oisoi elokim, as the Almighty commanded him, Abraham, oisoi velo osa, him, Avraham, not her, not Sarah, not Sarah. Ashkechon miyad. Up till now, we found that this halacha applies to Avraham Avinu. After all, the pasuk said, "Kasher tzivo also Elokim." From there, I know that Avraham was commanded, not Sarah. How do we know that this applies to future generations? Ledoros minolan. Tona debay Rabbi Shmuel. So from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, we have the following teaching. Before we go on, just note that we dashed underline the word tziva in the pasuk kasher tziva oisay lekim, and the Tona debay Shmuel in that from that yeshiva they teach the following. Kol mokom shenemar tzav. Wherever you see the word tzav or a variation thereof, eno ela zirus miyad uludoros. It's an expression of strengthening, and it applies not only immediately, but also for generations. Zeruz, dichtiv, where do we see the word tzav has to do with strengthening, encouraging? V'tzav es Yoshua v'chazkeu v'yamtzeu. In this pasuk, you see that Yoshua was commanded and strengthened, as these words v'chazkeu v'yamtzeu indicate. So the word tzav is associated with that concept. Miyad uledoros, where do we see that tzav has to do with something that has a future connotation as well? Dechtiv min hayoyim asher tzivo Hashem v'hol'o ledoros echem. From today, that which Hashem commanded, and onwards for future generations. Livdoso, the obligation of a father to redeem his firstborn male child. Minolan, from where do we know that a father is obligated in that? Dichtiv, kol b'chor bonecho tifdeh. All of your firstborn sons you shall redeem. The pasuk is addressing the father. Where the father doesn't do that, doesn't redeem his son. He didn't do it. He himself, a person, is obligated to see to it upon his awareness that he's a firstborn male child and wasn't redeemed. He has to take care of it himself. The double expression would seem to indicate that under all circumstances, you are to redeem yourself. If your father didn't do it, you must do it. We have, in addition to the double underline, we also have a triangle. And on the side of the Gemara, the triangle is explained as shlavim, stages. To establish that a mother is not obligated to redeem her son. From where do we know that a mother is not obligated to redeem her son? And the redemption of the son, I'm assuming that most people know what that is, but it involves the father, in this case, giving 5 silver coins to a Kohen, and with that, the son is then, the firstborn male child is then redeemed. So where do we know that a mother is not obligated? Dichtiv. The pasuk says tifteh, but you can read it tipodeh tifteh. So here we're engaged in not just the way the pasuk appears and is read from the Torah, but also an alternative possible reading to the word. And what we're doing here is something that only through the power and the offices of the oral tradition can this be done. It's not heaven forbid an arbitrary word game, but the Chazal knew at which point you can take a word and revowelize it for the sake of deriving some type of halachic outcome. So the pasuk itself, we read the word as we just saw, podo tifdeh, but it could be read tipodeh. It's a different verb form, and that's understood as follows. Kol shemitzuva livdoises atzmo, anyone who is obligated to redeem himself, mitzuva livdois es achirim, has upon him the obligation to see to it that others are redeemed. The chol she'eno mitzuva livdois es atzmo, anyone who is not obligated to redeem himself, eino mitzuva livdois achirim, is not obligated to redeem others. So tipodeh is a verb form that would indicate one redeeming himself, and tifdeh would be a verb form indicating the redemption of others. So there's a relationship between, if you're obligated to redeem yourself, you'd be obligated to care, to take care of others. Now with that, we are understanding that the woman being that she's not obligated to redeem herself, so she doesn't have to redeem her son. But no, did we establish that she doesn't have to redeem herself? Next stage. She, from where do we know that she is not obligated to redeem herself? Tichtiv, the pasuk said, and we saw this before, tifteh tipodeh. And now another angle to that drosha. Kol shachirim mitzuvim lifdoso, all those that others are obligated to redeem them, all those that have upon themselves the obligation to see to it that others are redeemed, mitzuva lifdos es atzmo, they are obligated to redeem themselves. V'chol she'ein achirim mitzuvin lifdoso, and all those that others are not obligated to see to their redemption, ein mitzuva lifdos es atzmo, are not obligated to redeem themselves. So let's just go over this once again. If you're an individual that others are obligated to see to it that you're redeemed, so you are that kind of individual that has to redeem themselves. Now, by having said this, we're then assuming that the woman is excluded because she's that kind of person that others do not have to see to it that she is redeemed. But did we establish that? From where do we know that others are not obligated to redeem the woman, the firstborn female? The Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Kol Bechor Bonecha Tivdeh. Bonecha, your male children, Velo Benosecha, not your female children. So if you can now work backwards, you would see that starting from this point, women are those types of people that others are not obligated to redeem them. Being that's the case, they're not obligated to redeem themselves. And being that they're not obligated to redeem themselves, they do not have the obligation to redeem others. Hence, women are excluded from redeeming their firstborn male children. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Hu Livdois Uvnoi Livdois Mi Koidim. Man is confronted with the following dilemma. He's an individual that himself had never been redeemed. He also has a firstborn male child that needs to be redeemed. Who comes first? What are the circumstances, money-wise, that will be revealed as we go on in the Gemara? Tona Rabbanan, Hu Livdois Uvnoi Livdois. A man has his own need to be redeemed, and he has to redeem his son. Hu Koidem Livno. He comes before his son. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Beno Kodmo. Rabbi Yehuda says that the son comes first. Shezeh Mitzvaso Al Aviv. The individual himself was obligated to be redeemed by his father. Shezeh Mitzvas Beno Alav. And the individual in question happens to have his own obligation to redeem his son. So when you're dealing with an adult that has this problem, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to do the mitzvah that's upon you, and the mitzvah that's upon you is to see to it that your son is redeemed. Once again, we have to clarify, what are the circumstances behind this source? Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Hakol Moidim, everyone agrees, and we continue to the top of Omid Beis. We've dashed underline Hakol Moidim in order to contrast this with Ki Pligi, third line from the top. As far as the immediate circumstance, there's no disagreement. We have a source, though, in which there is a disagreement. So, what are the circumstances of the disagreement? We have to wait till the third line. Kol Hecha, Deleko El Chomesh Slayim, where a man has a sum total of 5 sela. 5 sela is the Torah amount required for redeeming a child. So, if the person has all he has to his name is 5 sela, Hu Koidem Livno. He has to take care of himself first. My taimo. Why is that? Answer. Mitzvah de gufei adifa. Mitzvahs that apply to your own self, literally to your body, has precedence. Ki pligi. The machlokis tanakan rebuta comes up. Hechotiiko chomesh mishuabodim v'chomesh b'necharin. We're talking about a person, an adult, that has 5 sela worth of land that he happened to have sold in the course of his adult life. Those are chomesh mishubadim. He also has 5 sela coins. B'nei Chorin means in his pocket for our purposes. Free, available to him right now. So he's got 5 sela of land that he once owned and sold in his adult life. And he has 5 coins in his pocket. Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is the one that said he has to redeem his son. So, what is Rabbi Yehuda's approach to this situation? First of all, Rabbi Yehuda Savar Milve Dechsiv Batura, money obligations. Milve ordinarily means a loan. In this case, it means money obligations that are written in the Torah. For example, the Torah obligates a man to redeem his son. So he has a money obligation of paying 5 sela to a kohen. That's called a milve dechsiv b'Torah. It's a money obligation recorded in the Torah. Kiksuva b'shtar damya. It's like a loan recorded in a document. Let's just sidetrack for one moment. If a person borrowed money on June the 1st. And the loan was recorded in a document. And on August the 1st, that same borrower sold land that he owned. And on December 1st, the loan became due. Unfortunately, the man, the borrower, didn't have any money. The lender who lent the money on June the 1st says, "What, you don't have any money to pay me? What about the land that you had?" "Oh," he says, "well, I sold that land in August." He says, "Yeah, but you sold land, but you know you have a debt to me. I came first." So the lender seizes that land by virtue of the fact that the fellow who bought the land August 1st knew that he was buying from someone that owed money. How did he know that the money was owed? Because it was a loan recorded in a document that creates public awareness. So the buyer of the land on August 1st was buying at his own risk. Rav Yehuda says that money obligations that rest upon people that are recorded in the Torah have the same strength as a milvah ksuva b'shtar. Being that that's the case, you have this adult that was never redeemed. As soon as he was born, 30 days after his birth, we didn't mention that earlier, but we were maybe making the assumption that you're familiar with Pidyon HaBen, on the 30th day of his life, so the father is obligated to redeem his firstborn child. So you have this adult that for many years the debt of redemption existed, predating the sale of his land. He sold, we call the five sellah of Mishubadim, lands that this adult, this unredeemed adult, happened to sell. He sold it to buyers, but they were buying from a man that was never redeemed. There was a milvah ksuva b'Torah. There was a Torah money obligation upon this guy that you bought from. So the Gemara says, "Bahani chomesh porik livrei," with the five coins in his pocket, he redeems his newborn son. V'yosu kayin v'torah flei l'chomesh mishubadim l'didei. The kayin will go to those land purchasers and collect five sella of land for the redemption of the adult himself that had not been redeemed. Why, or what strength do the kohanim have to go to collect their debt from the purchasers? Because the individual sold the land was an unredeemed individual, and that debt to the kahuna predated their purchase of the land. So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, being that this is the scenario, both are taken care of. And the idea of what Rabbi Yehuda's loshen was in the source, b'no koidem, that means that the son is the first choice for being redeemed with the cash, in the father's pocket. We continue. The Rabbanon Savri, the Rabbanon who disagreed and said that the cash is to be used to redeem the fellow himself, the father himself, they hold milva dechsiba raisa, the debt that a person has because of the Torah command, lav kiksuva b'shtar damya. It's not tantamount to a loan recorded in a document. Kohanim cannot seize upon lands for the long overdue redemption money. So that's not an option. The Kohanim have no option to get, we'll say, an additional five sella from the land purchasers. So that, as far as the Rabbon are concerned, with you have only five sella, the five coins in the individual's pocket. V'hilkoch mitzvah degufei odiv. So those five b'nei chorin, those five personally owned coins, are to take care of himself. Mitzvah de gufei odif. And this concept of mitzvah de gufei odif, we pointed out on the second line from the top, in theory, everyone agrees with that. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees with it. The point of contention here is that in the scenario where Rabbi Yehuda and the Rachamim disagree, you have, in addition to the five B'nai Chorin, you also had those five Sela worth of land that were sold. And the issue is that available to the Kohanim or not? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it is available. Being that that's the case, the five B'nai Chorin coins he can use for his son's redemption. And the five Mishubadim, five Sela of land, will be used for his own redemption. According to Rabbanan, the five Sela of Mishubadim are not in the picture. Before we go further, we have a topic heading on the side, Nosei, which reads, La'lois l'rega l'iftois es b'no ezu kedem. Person is once again confronted with a choice. He's got enough money for either the thrice-year pilgrimage to the Beis HaMikdash, Aliyas HaRegel, and there are, as the Tosfos Ri HaZaken says, to be Oyla l'Regel, there are Hoitzoas HaDerech, there are expenses, travel expenses, there are other expenses involved in being Mekayim the Mitzvah and fulfilling the Mitzvah of Aliyas HaRegel, the holiday, thrice-year holiday pilgrimage to the Beis HaMikdash. So his choice is either to use the money for Aliyas HaRegel or to redeem his son. The Gemara. Tonu Rabbonu, Livtos es Atz es Benoi v'Lalos HaRegel. Poida es Beno v'Achakach Oyla HaRegel. First thing to take care of is the redemption of your son. If after you redeem your son, you come into more money, you have extra money, then do Aliyas HaRegel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Oyla HaRegel v'Achakach Poida es Beno. What you have to take care of immediately is the mitzvah of Aliyas HaRegel. Use the money that you have to do Aliyas HaRegel, and afterwards redeem your son. Why? Why that order? Shezu mitzvah oiveres, vezu mitzvah shein oiveres. One is a time passing mitzvah. Oiveres means it's passing. Aliyas HaRegel is accomplished, is fulfilled only during the holiday time itself. Once the holiday passes, there's no more mitzvah. So, as opposed to Pidyon HaBen, that's if you don't do it now, you do it tomorrow. If not tomorrow, the next day. It's something that's not, it's not a passing mitzvah time-wise. It's true that there's an initial earliest time in which to fulfill that, not before 30 days of age, but afterwards, it's considered a mitzvah she'eino overis. It's not going to pass you by. Bishlamal Rabbi Yehuda, kidekomar taimo. We understand Rabbi Yehuda's point of view. He gave us a reason why oyla l'regel, why the use of the money for Aliyas HaRegel takes precedence. Elo Rabbonan Maitam, what's the reasoning behind the Rabbonan that say Pidyon HaBen takes precedence? Diyomar Kro, there is a posuk upon which they are based. It says, Kol b'chor b'nechot ivdeh, v'hodar, and then later, Lo yira'u ponai reikom. That posuk is a reference to the visitation to the Beis HaMikdash in the context of Aliyas HaRegel. So the posuk insists first giving precedence to redeeming of the son, and then the travel to the Beis HaMikdash. Tanu Rabbonan, minayin shi'im hoyu lo chamisha bonim mechomesh noshim. From where do we know that a man who happens to have five sons, and they happen to be all firstborn sons from five different wives, shechayev liftois kulon, that father is obligated to redeem each one of them. Talmud Lomar, Kol Bechor Bonecho Tivdeh. Says, all of your firstborn sons you must redeem. So the Gemara says, Pshita, Bepete Rechem Tola Rachmona. That's an obvious teaching. The Posuk in describing the redemption of the firstborn, it speaks explicitly about that child that exited the mother's womb first. The first child to exit, the first male child to exit a mother's womb is to be redeemed. So if a man has five women that bore as their first children, he has five wives, and each one of them bore as their first children males, they are to be redeemed. Just by reading the psukim, you would have come to this conclusion. What do you need a Tanaic source to tell me the obvious? So the Gemara says, it's not so obvious. Mahu detema, without the source, I might have thought, Nelef b'chor b'chor minachlo. I would have thought to apply a gezerah shava, a word comparison, between the topic of redemption and the topic of inheritance. Ma lahalon reishis oinoi. In the topic of inheritance, the Torah speaks about a firstborn receiving a double portion, twice as much as any one other child receives, as any one other son receives in an inheritance. So, if I had learned the Gezerah Shava, I would have concluded that the firstborn that requires redemption is the same firstborn that receives a double portion. And just like there, in the case of inheritance, the Torah describes the firstborn as reishis ono, literally the first of his strength. But it means, for our purposes, the father's firstborn. Afkan, so too with regard to pidyon haben, reishis ono. I would have thought that it's a reference to the father's firstborn, the first son born to this father. He may have five different wives that never had children, but the wife that gave birth first would be the one to be redeemed. Komash Malon, so the Tanaic source reveals to us not to connect the laws of redemption with the laws of primogeniture, the firstborn receiving a double portion. Before going further, we glance at the side under the topic heading, the Nosei. We read, Menolon de'av chayav lelamed es benoi Torah. From where do we know that a father is obligated to teach his son Torah? U'minayin she'eino isha chayav es lelamed es beno. And from where do we know that the mother is not obligated to teach her son Torah? Lelamdoi Torah, Menolon. From where do we know that a father is obligated? Dechtiv, v'limaditem oisom es b'neichem. And the Torah commands us, and we read this several times a day in the Kriya Shema, you shall teach your sons Torah. V'hecha de lo agmer avua, mechayev ihu l'migmar nafshei. And where a father did not teach his son, every person is obligated to teach themselves. Dechtiv, this is a different pasuk. It's in Devarim, Perek Hey, pasuk Aleph, and it says there, "Ulamaditem." On the side, we have a brief quote of a partial quote of this pasuk, Devarim Hey, pasuk Aleph. In the margin, we've written, "Ulamaditem oisam, ushmartem laasoisam." And the pasuk says, "And you shall learn." Ihi menolon delo mechayva, and we're using the same marking scheme that we used earlier, the triangles represented the stages in order to conclude that the mother is not obligated, and we already indicated these shapes. Also, the trapezoid shape, which we read already, we highlighted earlier as being as emphasizing who we are talking about. So far, then, we've said that a father is obligated, and if he doesn't carry out his responsibility, then a person has to learn himself. Continuing in the Gemara, Ihi Menola Delo Mechayva, the mother, from where do we know that she is not obligated? Dichtiv, and here we'll see a very similar form of derivation as we discussed earlier with the issue of redeeming the son. The Pasuk says, we have Velimaditem, Ulimaditem. We've seen these two words. In this case, as opposed to what we had before, here you in fact have two distinct words. Here it's not so much a function of re-vowelizing the word. So one pasuk says, you shall teach your sons, and the other person says, you shall learn. Kol shemitzuva lelamed, he who is obligated to, let me read that again, kol shemitzuva lelamed, mitzuva lelamed, he who has upon himself his own personal obligation to study Torah, he has to teach Torah to his son. V'chol she'eino mitzuva l'lamoid, he was not commanded to learn for himself. Eino mitzuv lamed. He is not commanded to teach the son. So in saying this, we're making an assumption that the woman, that a woman is not obligated to learn herself. From where do we know that she is not obligated to teach herself? To teach herself, she should learn for herself. Tichtiv, the same words. V'limadetem ulimadetem. Kol she'achirim mitzuvin lelamdo. All those that others are obligated to teach them. Mitzuv lelamed es atzmo. So if a person is that kind of individual that others are expected to teach them, so they would have to teach themselves in the event that others didn't teach them. V'chol she'en achirim mitzuvin lelamdo. All those that others are not obligated to teach, ein mitzuva lelamed es atzmo, so they don't have to teach themselves. And with that, we're supposed to understand that a woman is not obligated to teach her son. But that's assuming that she is that kind of person that others do not have to teach. Uminayin shein achir mitzuvin lelamdo. From where do we know that others are not obligated to teach the woman, the girl? Tiyomar kro v'limadetem oisom es b'neichem. And we emphasize here on terms of gender, the pasuk says, and you shall teach your sons. V'lo b'noseichem. So women are not those that others are supposed to teach. So since others are not expected to teach her, she has no obligation to learn herself. And since she has no obligation to learn herself, so she is not obligated to teach her son. Tonu Rabbanan, hu lilmoid uvnod lilmoid. Here a father is confronted with the following choice. Either he learns Torah for himself, or he teaches his son Torah. Whatever the circumstances are, he can't do both. So who koidem livno? He has precedence. He comes before his son. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im beno zorez umemuluch v'talmudo miskayim biyodo. But no kodmo, if a person sees that his son is diligent and is of a superior retentive capabilities, then his son has precedence over him, over the father. Kiha d'Rav Yankiv b'rei d'Rav Acha bar Yankiv. Here we have a story that illustrates what we just learned. This story involves the son of Rav Acha bar Yankiv. The son, his name was Rav Yankiv. Shadri Avu Lekamei Dabai. So Rav Acha sent his son Rav Yankiv to study by Abaye. He also, when the father Rav Acha visited, Chazi Delohava Mechadet, or I should say, when the son came home to his father Rav Yankiv, the father noticed Chazia. He saw Delohava Mechadet and Shmaitse. His Torah learning was not sharp. So the father of Achav says, I have precedence then over you. Tuv at the ezel ano. You stay here. Take care of the shop. Take care of the work that needs to be done. And I'm going to go off to learn. Shom Abaye da ko hava osi. Abaye heard that Rav Acha was on his way. Now there's we continue with this story. Have ahu mazik beirabona d'Abaye. There was a demon in the yeshiva, in the base medrash of Abaye, and this demon was so ferocious, so dangerous. T'chiyava aili betrain afilu bimoma havu mitziki. Even if two people, and even if it were during the daytime, would enter the base medrash, they would subject themselves to danger. The Gemara is making the assumption that we're familiar with the laws and the precautions necessary in dealing with demons. So the general thinking is that your run-of-the-mill demon will not attack two people by day. So to accentuate the immense threat that this particular demon posed, the Gemara tells us that this was so threatening that even two people by day would be subjecting themselves to danger if they would encounter it. So Abaye had a big problem on his hands. His base measures was kind of off limits in the meantime. Omar Lahu, Abaye told his community, Lo leisiv le'inish ushpiza, no one should host Rav Acha, means give him to sleep, give him any hospitality. Efshir de Misrachish Nisa. What Abaye's intention was is if no one's going to host Rav Acha, he'll have no choice other than to go to the base medicine and sleep over there. What was Abaye hoping for? That Rav Acha's visitation to the Beis Medrash and his encounter with the demon would be catastrophic for the demon. Why? Rav Acha was an outstandingly pious individual. And as a result of his piety, the demon would cease to exist. And that's what happens. Oh, he went in, Bos Tahu Bei Rabbanan. Rav Acha set down camp. He slept overnight in that base medrash. And when he entered the base medrash, Idmile Ketanino Deshivu Rishvasei, the demon appeared to Rav Acha as a creature having seven heads, called Kriya Dekora. Each bow that Rav Acha did in his prayers, Nosar Chad Resha, one head fell off. So after seven bowings in prayer, the demon was destroyed. Omar Lahu Lamochar, the next day, Rav Acha said to the community, he says, Ilo Israchish Nisa Sakintin, if a miracle did not happen to me, I would have been endangered. Tanu Rabbanan. Before we continue, let's glance at the side. We have a topic heading, which reads Lu Mutura Olisa Isha Ezu Kedem, the continued study of Torah or marriage, which takes precedence. For those who are veteran listeners of Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, you've heard me say many times that one is not to rely on what we discuss in our Gemara Shiurim for practical application of halacha. Here too, we just want to remind you that we're going to learn the Gemara, but as far as what one is to do in actuality, so one should consult a proper halachic authority regarding this matter as well as all others. Now the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Lilmot Torah v'Lisa Isha, the study of Torah or getting married, Yilmot Torah v'Achar Kach Yisa Isha. A person should study Torah and then get married. V'im Yev Shalo b'lo Isha, if he cannot continue learning without a wife. We're describing a situation where a person is preoccupied with feelings of intense necessity to be wedded, and that preoccupies his thoughts, and without that he can't learn Torah in a state of purity. So we say then Yisa Isha V'achar Kach Yilmod Torah, so then marry and after that continue learning Torah. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Halacha Noise Isha V'achar Kach Yilmod Torah. So Rav Yehuda rules that a person is obligated to first get married and then study Torah. Rav Yochanan in response to Rav Yehuda's ruling, who said first get married and then continue learning Torah, so Rav Yochanan says, how could that be? Rechayim b'tzavaro v'yasok b'torah. Rechayim b'tzavaro is an expression, without literally translating, it means an obligation to support a family. How could a person have upon himself, now the literal translation would be a grindstone around his neck. That's an indication of something that's very arduous,
very time-consuming and challenging to provide a steady income for a wife and a family,
and at the same time expect the person to be able to learn Torah. So what Rabbi Yochanan then is saying, that you would first learn Torah and then get married. Velo pligi, the Gemara says, in fact, there's no argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan. Ha lon, v'ha lehu. One applies to us, and one applies to them. Exactly who applies to whom, you have here the B'nai Bovel and the B'nai Eretz Yisrael. In order to explain that, you would have a Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos. We're going to learn Rashi's Pshat, but we highly recommend looking into the Tosfos for his opposite approach. Rashi says, Ha lon v'halahu. B'nai Bovel hoyu hoyuchin v'gursin mishnayas atanoim b'Eretz Yisrael. The Jews of Bovel had a common practice of traveling to Eretz Yisrael to study Torah. Umitoch shalomdim chutz l'mekoman. And since they were not at home, ein tzorche habayas mutolin olav. The need for constant preoccupation in providing support for the family is not upon him. He's not at home. He's in Eretz Yisrael. So for the B'nai Bovel that travel to Eretz Yisrael, noisei isha, first get married, dahave below hirhur. That will solve the problem of impure thoughts, being that he has a wife, his mind is on his wife and not on other women. And after getting married, he then goes to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. So the ruling of first get married and then learn is addressing the B'nai Bovel, who would first get married in Bovel, travel to Eretz Yisrael, and then continue learning Torah. I can just point out ahead of time that the Rabbeinu Tam has great difficulty with this approach, and being that how in the world can a person leave his wife and children behind, what are they going to do for their income? And reference is made to the Gemara in Gittin, where Rebbe Yosser says that's a terrible thing for a person to leave his family, leave his wife and children, and expect them to support themselves. It can lead to all kinds of problematic means of income to put things in a very clean, pleasant fashion. Nevertheless, we said that we're sticking with the Rashi Pshat for the time being, so the ruling in the Gemara of first get married and then study Torah, that's Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, who, by the way, Rav Yehuda was in Bovel, so he was issuing a ruling for his own community, first get married and then go travel off to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. Let's continue in the Rashi, Lehu. Levnei Eretz Yisrael, the ruling of Rabbi Yochanan applies to the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. Haloimdim b'mekaimon, they learned in their, they stayed, they learned where they lived. Im noisei isha, if they are going to get married, yitzorcha abayis mutolin olav yivatlu. They'll be occupied with pursuing an income, and that will restrain them from being able to learn Torah. So Rabbi Yochanan, who said, how can you expect a man to get married and have a grindstone around his neck and learn Torah? First learn Torah, and then get married. The Tosfos Pshat, as we said, he actually comes out saying the opposite. You should look into the Tosfos for further edification. We continue in the Gemara. Mishtabeach le Rav Chisda le Rav Huna. B'dirav Hamnuna, Rav Chisda spoke to Rav Huna, and in his speaking to Rav Huna, Rav Chisda praised Rav Hamnuna to Odom Godolhu, that he is a great man. Amar le, Rav Huna, hearing this praise of Rav Hamnuna, says, Kishiyavoi liotcha, when he comes to you, Rav Chisda, when he comes to visit you, Havi'ehu liyodi, bring him to me. I want to meet this man that you say is so great. Ki asa, when he came, in other words, when Rav Hamnuna came to Rav Huna, Chazye de lo poris sudra. Rav Huna saw Chazye. He saw him. That's Rav Huna saw Rav Hamnuna that he did not have his head covered the way that married people had their head covered. Rashi says de lo poris sudra kederach hanesuim shei regim lechasis roshan. Taking Rashi at a simple translation value, it seems to say that married men used to cover their heads. Rav Hamnuna then came with his head uncovered. Omar le, Rav Huna said, "My time alo priestess sudra. Why is there not a sudar, this head covering on your head?" Omar le, "Delo nasivna." Rav Huna said, "I'm not married." Whoa, hadrinu la pe mine. Rav Huna turned away in disgust. Omar le, and Rav Huna said, "Chozi, I want you beware. See the lo chosis lehu laapi ad dinasvis. I don't want to see your face. I don't want to see you again until you get married." Rav Huna then was very insistent on Rav Hamnuna's getting married. And why was he so upset about Rav Hamnuna not being married? Let us just make an assumption that Rav Hamnuna at this encounter was above 20 years of age. Let's assume that. And Rav Huna litame, Rav Huna in his consternation was acting consistent with what he teaches. The Omar, Rav Huna says, Ben Esrim Shana v'lo nosa isha, 20-year-old man that has not yet married, Kol Yomov, we skip the brackets for a moment, Behirhur Avera. He will be, for the rest of his life, having Hirhur Avera. Hirhur Avera are impure thoughts. Let's read the line again, but this time with the brackets. Rav Huna says that any man that hasn't married by 20 years of age, Be'avera, he will live a life of immorality. Be'avera salka daitach, you mean to say that he's going to live a life of immorality? That's not so. Elo'emo kol yomov behuhur avera. Because he waited till such an advanced age of 20 years, he will no longer be able to cancel, to overcome impure thoughts. The thinking being that if a person before he reaches 20 gets married, so his existence with a wife and all that entails of husband-wife intimacy, that will serve to ward off or thwart any impure thoughts of having any effect, having any influence. So Rav Huna was very upset. And here this man comes and allowed himself to reach 20 years of age and remain unmarried. That was intolerable. Omar Rava, V'chein Tona Debei Rabbi Yishmael. Ad Esrim Shana, Yoshev HaGadosh Baruch Hu Mitzap Elod Mosai Yiso Isha. Up till 20 years of age, the Almighty is sitting, so to speak, kivyochol, and looking, waiting for a person. When will he get married? Kevon Shigiyash Esrim Velo Nosa. Once a person reaches 20 and is not yet married, Omer, so the Almighty says, Tipach Atzmoisov. Let his bones be blasted. Omar of Chista, Ha Da'adifna Mechavroi, that which I have an advantage over my colleagues, Dinasivna Beshitzar. I got married at 16 years of age. And being that I got married so young, so everything we said before will apply all the more so. The ability to live a life without impure thoughts. Rav Chista goes on to say, V'ahava nesivna bar besar, and had I married at 14 years of age, we continue at the top of Daf Lamed. Have amino la sotan gira be'enecha. Literally, it means I would have said to the sotan who is, we'll say, the source of all types of temptation and impure thoughts, I would have said to him, gira be'enecha, arrows into your eyes. Rashi at the top line says, "Havamino le lason gir beinecha klomar hoisi mizgarebo." I would have incited him or challenged him V'sotan hu yetzahara v'lo ira she'achdieni. And being that I would have married at 14, I would have had no fear that he would have risen to the challenge and caused me to sin. Amar lei, we continue in the Gemara, Amar lei Rava le Rav Nosson bar Ami, a de yodoch al tzavare de brech, while you're literally, while your hand is on your son's neck, mishitzar v'ad esrim v'tarti, from 16 years of age until 22. V'yamri lo, another version is mitam nisori ad esrim v'arba, from 18 till 24. What does Rava mean here? What is he telling Rav Nosson about your having your hand on your son's neck and then giving these ages? The meaning of this Gemara will be revealed by our studying the Rashi on this particular section. But before we do so, let's continue with the next couple lines of Gemara, where it says, Kitanoi. These two age ranges are actually a machloikes tanoim, a tanaic disagreement. The Pasuk says, Chanoch lenar al pi darkoi. It's a very oft-quoted Pasuk. And a chanoch lenar means to educate the child, the youth, al-pi darko. Rashi says, across from here, Rashi, al-pi darko, derech shekol yomov yehi misnaig bo. The path, the route that a person will take for the rest of his life, chanoch lo binaruso. Educate him. Put him on the path while he is still a youth. Ve'ezu binaruso, and what constitutes youth? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia, we have in our source Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia arguing about the age range. And if we continue in the Gemara source, the Tanaic source, Chalomar Mishitzavat Esrim Betartin, one says that this the age for educating a child or a youth, putting him on his life's path, that is through the ages 16 through 22. V'chad Omar, the other opinion says, mitam nisori v'ad esrim v'arba, from 18 till 24. As far as why is this Gemara over here, so there are two approaches in the Rashi to explain this. First approach, second line from the top, we go back to the Rashi, ad yodach atzavari debrech, ba'od yodcha takif al bincha. While you still have the, we'll call the upper hand, the strength over your son, kodem shiyagdil, before he reaches a certain level of adulthood, v'lo yikabel teicha chascha, and he won't accept your admonishing anymore. There's a certain age at which it's assumed that children simply don't regard, don't listen, don't heed their parents' direction. Sounds very contemporary, wouldn't you say? Well, don't be surprised. The Torah is beyond time. The Torah is timeless. What was is what is. And what is what will be. So, ad yodach atzavri debrech, during this age, when you still have the upper hand, hasil isha, marry a woman to him. Marry off your son. Find a wife for your son. It almost implies here that if you don't act during this time period, who's to say that your son will ever get married? But that is subject to interpretation. Maybe who is to say that your son will find a proper wife? So while you have control over him, and we've given you the age ranges, see to it that he gets married. Rashi continues, Mishitzar Shonin, from 16 years of age, Yigiazman Lichnois, that's the time when he would be, say, suitable to take in a wife. I'm assuming Lichnos means to take a wife in. We saw Rav Chisto having got married at that age. V'yoyser mi'esr metartin al tachreu. And don't delay more than age 22. Loshon Acher. And now a second approach to what Rava is saying. While you still have strength over your son, have a zohir lelamdei teichachos ve'ezu zmano mishitzar ve'ad esrim v'tartin. Here, Rashi is presenting Rava in a much more general fashion. Teichachos, not limiting this to the issue of marrying off your son, but admonishing him, chastising him, instructing him. Teichachos has to do with teaching the right way of life. So do that during that age span. Botzir mishitzar, less than 16, ein bo das the kabel teichachos kol kach. He doesn't have the sufficient mental maturity to absorb your admonishings. The al tachbid yisurin v'tochachos. And before 16, so you shouldn't come with, say, a heavy approach to chastising and admonishing. The yoyser me'eser v'tartin, beyond 22, yesh lochu shelo yivareit. You would have to, beyond 22, you have to worry that he won't rebel. Yivayit literally means to kick you and rebel. Vizet Yikr in Rashi seems to view this as the main pshat, the main explanation of what Rava is saying. So here you have priceless educational information and child rearing advice. We should only merit being able to fulfill these words of wisdom. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.